by a shark fight, by the way.
Oh. Alright, guys. So, welcome again, once again, to Professional Goblin Games Podcast. Oh my god, games. Professional Goblin Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Gladstein, with your co-host,
Mike Myler, who's, by the way, this entire thing is my idea, just to be perfectly clear.
Yes. And again, we chose the perfect name for it, just to confuse me every time I want to say it.
And well, you're a goblin and I'm a professional, so I thought...
Is that how it works?
And so with us today, who do we have? You want to introduce yourself?
Oh, okay. I'm Kristen Sowards. I'm from Lost Spheres Publishing. I've also done a bit of freelance for a few other game companies. We can talk about that later, probably. But
well, it's great to have you here with us today. So sorry we got a little bit of a late start. But anyway, we're here and ready to go. So, Mike, I don't think we have a review today, do we?
I don't think that Alex gave us anything to review now.
Oh, my God. People have to get on this. Kristen, you have to kind of give us something next week.
I will do that.
And Mike, I got a thing for you next week. I think Bat-Bro may be retiring. I have a good thing for you.
Oh, good. Well, you're a costume guy, so Bat-Bro was horrible.
Nice.
I was expecting so much more, and it's just like, yeah, I'm looking forward to your A game, Scott. All
right. I don't know about my A game, but it'll at least be my B game.
I could talk about Origins a little bit and what I thought about it.
Yeah, definitely. Let's start off with that. I mean, I missed Origins, so go ahead.
I liked it. It was. There were a lot of gamers around, but it wasn't like Gen Con level C of explode your mind number of people. So that was nice. It felt like everything was accessible, whereas Gen Con doesn't really feel that way for me anymore.
No, Gen Con is a huge just. It's overwhelming. It's a city, man.
Last year was my first Gen Con, and wow. After being used to PaizoCon for several years, I was, overwhelmed.
Yeah, Gen Con. Yeah, it's totally insane. What was it, 60,000 last year?
Yeah, something like that.
And now they have the Lucas Oil Stadium, so it's going to be even bigger. And, I mean, I don't know. I dug it. I finally got to do the remember that Linked Battle Mech game they have?
Yeah,
I finally got to do that. So that was cool. It was a couple things weirded me out. Like, you didn't get comms to the other people, so you couldn't talk to your opponents. It was kind of a bummer. And then there was a dude in our game who was just fucking kill stealing. So, like, we all had 6-7 kills, and he had like 24 because he waits till the very end of the mech's life, and then he'd swoop in and get the kill.
Just pick it off.
Yeah, like, we all paid $4 to sit down and play this, and that's what you're gonna do? Like, seriously? Douche move.
So one thing about Origins is it's now the number 3 biggest con, apparently.
It was the number 3 biggest con, and then it got knocked out by UK Games Expo briefly, and then they just won it back by, like, a couple hundred attendees.
There you go, man. Yeah, I was looking at that on the End World the other day. It's Rise has returned.
Now, it's like half industry, too, though. Like, it's like retailer, right?
Yeah. Origins is definitely more about board games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. And then we had trouble finding the Paizo stuff. So, like, I don't know. I wanted to demo Starfinder, and I didn't get to, which was a bummer.
I did.
How was it?
It's really cool, and I didn't sign an NDA, so when we get to that,
I was poking him before, but Mike, spoiler here, he didn't get through the ship combat, so,
I didn't. Sorry.
So, have you...
But
have
I
you
got ever... to play 5th level.
Cool.
That's cool.
Mike, have you ever done, Gamma? Either of you?
I have not done Gamma, no.
So, I did Gamma 1 year, and it sounds like on that spectrum, it's like Gen Con, more player-focused, consumer-focused... Gamma, super,
retail,
yeah, it's all retail. Almost everything was brick and mortar, and I'm sure they're like, I don't sell brick and mortar.
Right.
But it sounds like Origins is a nice kind of, more towards the center. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it was cool. I liked it, and it was only 3-hour drive from here, so that was nice.
You gonna do it again in the future?
Say what?
You doing it again in the future?
I mean, I don't know. I'll be coming from New Zealand, so...
Oh, yeah,
unless
that's right.
Someone pays me a lot of money, no. Also, it's in Ohio, so, you have to go to Ohio.
Yeah.
When are you moving to New Zealand?
October is the plan.
Cool.
And, Mike, we're getting a lot of your forehead right now, by the way.
Well, my forehead is beautiful.
It is gorgeous, but I think it wants out other parts of your face.
Sorry.
No, you're good. Is that it for Origins, Mike?
Yeah, I dug it. Go check out Origins if you are a little bit exhausted or perturbed by Gen Con. And would do it again.
Very cool, very cool. So, again, we're skipping that first segment, so that was kind of what we're doing in place of it. Mike gave his review of Origins instead of a product. After this, we generally talk about either a character that we enjoyed playing, some story or a lesson we learned if it's something in the past. Now, Kristen, do you have something that you're itching to tell us?
Yeah, sure.
Take it away. It's all yours.
I have a character. Definitely. You want me to go?
Yeah, go for it, man.
Go for it.
Cool. So, what I'm doing right now in my friend Craig's game is I am actually playing what we jokingly call my rainbow, which is it has one level of anything. Doesn't have any.
Hey, I've done that too. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it has no repeats at all. It is kind of a melee focused character, and there is a feat that I want to say Trail Seeker from EN World throughout that is called Jack of All Trades that allows you to sync up a class feature to your hit dice.
Oh.
And so you get like a piece of a class that goes up with everything, but not the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So like I have a species enemy that's ramping for orcs, or I have like an effective level for like my Aegis armor because I'm playing some Green Scarred stuff up in there.
Mm-hmm.
But a bunch of different stuff, and just the way it comes together is super cool, super interesting, and I get to play all sorts of third-party stuff kind of jammed into one character.
Awesome.
And, you know, I think a lot of people get spooked when you crossbreed third-party stuff, but I can talk about that all day, too. It's a really fun character, and I think, you know, just kind of seeing how things riff off of each other, you know, you've got, like, it has a level of one of interjections, Master of Forms, it's kind of like a Wuxia martial artist sort of thing,
yeah.
And I slapped that in with Hunter from Fistful of Denari, and just all this crazy stuff. I've got a little bit of sneak in there. And, you know, I guess the thing that's the takeaway from the character is, you know, everybody, Pathfinder, the Bible, generally says play to 20, you know. But first off, not a lot of people get to play to 20. And, you know, fortunately, I am blessed with a gaming group that hits 20 more than it doesn't.
Wow.
And that's awesome, but you don't always get to. And so getting to play a character where I get to kind of combine all these different things and just see how far it goes. Around 11, I thought I was done. You know, I wasn't keeping up very well. I have a urban barbarian peer who was outpacing me quite well. But last few levels, I've actually pulled pretty far ahead in terms of combat effectiveness. He's more of a tank anyway, so we riff off each other really well, and I get my sneak damage off of him. But teamwork feats also super helpful for the character.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can combine a little and still get a lot, I guess. Everybody's like deep dive, get to 20, get to that ultimate, unlock your, you know, whatever. But a lot of times you see those ultimate class abilities and they're insane, sure, but who gets to play them? So
by the time you reach 20th level of Pathfinder, you have so many different build options that you can utilize a number of different combinations to get like some really cool, different, powerful, esoteric abilities that are like your thing. You know?
Absolutely.
So I actually did something pretty similar to you at one point. It was a GMPC, to be fair.
Fair, okay.
But his name was Wilts. Wilts was using only core and APG stuff, I think it was. I think it was Ultimate Combat as well. Was literally just I think it was like 7th or 8th level, was exclusively one level in every class. And I was like,
nice.
Melee, so he had to always have a full BAB class. But the thing was, he got really, really, really absurd saves.
Seriously, my saving throws are jacked.
Yeah. It's because
like
you get that
30.
Bump in the at first level.
Well, that's
because
all base levels plus two.
Exactly.
Two
right.
So.
Yep.
So
nice.
I had that. He had. I used a lot of ion stones to help him keep up with stuff. And the other thing was, in terms of feats, it was a GM PC, I was having fun. They needed someone to fill a spot every now and then, and sometimes they'd be like, okay, Wilt will come with you. He was there, like, the guy who oversaw their military camp, and if they needed an extra person to the party, Wilt would volunteer.
Gotcha.
If we were missing a player for the evening. And I just kept giving him fleet.
Just fleet feet?
He had fleets.
He was super fast.
And he had run and fleet, which meant he could move, like, faster than a horse. He could just... It was just bizarre. Nice. But same game, it's a good segue to my story. Speaking of horses in that game, this is the story of Boss. Boss was played by my friend Josh. This was in this big Dead Men game. I ran 12 players for 2.5 years. It was great. A 12-player game. Ugh. Mixed online, offline at the same time.
That's crazy.
Oh, it was insane. But anyway, their whole premise was that they were a penal legion, so they were serving for someone in prison. And every day they served was one day off their sentence. And if you died in good service, the person you were serving for had served a life sentence. So a lot of interesting characters came out of that. One of them was a samurai. Now, history, and by history I mean me, forgets his name. But this samurai, we'll call him Josh for the sake of it, rode a horse. And this horse was named Boss. Now, Boss was one of those characters that you roll, you get a 20. You get maxing your dice every time. The horse would do improbably awesome things. It bit a megalodon to death.
Wait, your horse? Don't beat a shark to death?
The horse bit the megalodon to death, dealing the most damage and getting the final kill.
So this, like, third-level characters in Pathfinder, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are badass.
Fair.
And Josh eventually decided after the first few games, especially after that feat, that he was not the PC. He was not the character. Boss was the character, and his samurai happened to be his accessory.
Nice.
So as he leveled them up, he's like, well, Boss takes this, and I guess the samurai gets this, whatever. And Boss...
I've seen that with Eidolons, but not with a horse.
With a horse, and it was just a samurai's horse, man. I think he was a heavy-trained warhorse, and that's all he was. He just killed everything. And he would
fight
things
to death. And no extra hit dice from anything?
No, samurai get hit dice for their horse.
Yeah, they do. Okay, I should say that was the animal companion he chose. That was
gotcha.
His mount.
I'll just say, like, if you could pick a warhorse, get it, because it is a third-level character from the gate.
3-5, if you're doing a low-level game, camels were better because you had spit, and it was really obnoxious at low levels. Once you had higher, horses were much better. But yeah, that's the story of Boss.
My game. Fireball, horse, gone usually, so people are scared of horses in my game.
But yeah, so that was Boss. Boss was the character, and Samurai was his. I won't call him his mount. His mounted dude who swings a sword sometimes. So I think the character died at one point, and we kept the horse around.
Wow.
But yes, that is the legend of Boss the horse. He is quite
nice.
The boss. So Mike, you got something for us today?
Have I told the story of Robo Hitler before?
No, I don't think so. That
Hitler.
Sounds good.
Okay, this is a story about modesty. I was playing in Crucible City, which was this incredible multiple user interface of MUX back in like early 2000s when I was in high school. And like, you go in and everything was typed, right? So it was like World 20, but you typed everything.
Yeah, I know what MUX is.
And you got experience from running games for people, and I ran a ton of games for people, so I had one of the most powerful characters on the server. And he was just a total knockoff of, like, Green Arrow and Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I made fun of him. Like, he had an invisible jet, which I called my Super Stealth Jet. In all capitals, like, every time we referred to it. And I did a lotto, and in the lotto, I got to play in, like, the big, like, global GM game. So the people who run the server run this game for a global plot that affected all the other games. So I'd have to incorporate, like, oh, we have a demon attack going on right now, so, like, you guys fight some demons along with these supervillains, right? And this was the interdimensional Nazis.
Okay.
And it was like the capstone of it, so it was like the big deal, and it was me and all the other super high-level players basically got in. And everybody came to watch, so there were like 200-some people watching this whole role-playing event. And we fly out to the moon of Jupiter where they've got their secret hidden base and they're about to fire the cannon to destroy the Earth or whatever. And I get there on my super stealth jet, and you know, like the stealthy dude I am, I'm like rolling through the station looking for things to shut down. And I run into Robo Hitler. And I'm like, oh, sweet. And I was a teenager, so I power gamed the shit out of my character.
Of course.
Arrows that did like nuclear detonation blast level damage on a hit.
Oh god.
Plus other
an
stuff.
Arrow?
Yeah, with an arrow. It was okay. This is Mutants and Masterminds first edition.
Oh wow, why are you talking about?
Good stuff.
There were caps in there. That's how they did first edition. I actually really prefer the way they designed first edition. But anyway, no, neither here nor there. So he's overpowered. And I shoot a roll, make all my rolls, I hit the shit out of Robo Hitler, and then the GM's like, okay, well, describe the scene and what happens. And I furiously type out this, like, 800-word masterful scene. And he's like, oh, okay. All right, are you sure this is what you want? And this was Jason Tondra, by the way, Dr. Comics.
Okay.
You will know him from some upcoming DC titles, I think, and all the recent Arthurian RPG stuff is Dr. Comics. He's fantastic.
I got him on.
He literally is a professor of comic books. Just want to make that clear to you guys. Literally professor of comics. Awesome. Yeah, Jason Todgers. He's like, you sure this is what you want? I was like, yeah. He's like, you're 100% positive. You looked some of this up? And I was like, yeah, of course. And I didn't look it up. I should have. Mm-hmm. So what my character said as he fires the arrow at Robo Hitler, I thought was Arbeit mein frei, which is what was over Auschwitz, means the work will set you free. I thought it would be a very poignant thing to surprise him. What Sniper actually yelled was Achtung Juden.
Oh no!
To anyone who speaks German, that is attention Jew. So Robo Hitler's rolling around in space station, you know, there's a superhero attack he's been expecting going on. Then suddenly, someone yells, "Attention, Jew!" Which, if nothing else, would have to startle him, right? All the things you would expect to hear, "Attention, Jew" is the last thing you would expect to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, everyone lost their fucking minds. They had to, like, shut down the chat channels for 20 minutes while they got everybody under control, and yeah. As I learned to laugh at my own mistakes, and when the GM asks you twice if that's what you want to do, there you really, 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 really should seriously consider it as a fair person, whether or not, and scrutinize it carefully, because otherwise you might call Hitler a Jew.
That, speaking as a Jew, is hilarious.
Yeah, no, I yeah, it's super fun. Yeah.
God,
and I
bless
didn't
you,
kill
Robo
Hitler,
Hitler,
by the way. He survived, of course.
Wait, Robo Hitler survived?
Yeah.
God damn it.
Like, got away, mustache twist survived, or did you guys actually.
No, he got away, mustache twist survived. Although we destroyed the naval base.
Fair enough.
So,
Jason Sonu, I think, has pointed out that there's a ceiling fan or something going on in the background. And it's not from me.
There.
Yep.
I have killed mine, so.
It's Scott.
Yeah,
Scott
I have his fan going
right now. And for anyone.
I'll turn myself off for a bit. But it's 118 here, unfortunately, so.
Yeah, today is the summer solstice, and so it is insanely hot here.
Let's see. I have my phone here. It is currently. Currently 116. I don't know if you guys can see that.
Yeah, they shut down airports and stuff, right?
What?
They shut down airports and stuff.
Yeah, well, they shut it off for a different reason than you think. It's not that the asphalt's melting or the parts are melting.
A lift issue.
Yeah, it's a lift issue. Back in the 90s when this happened last time, they, the manuals didn't. Oh, well, he was like, you have to have this much space to go for this degree of heat. But it didn't go up. The manuals didn't go up to 122.
Oh.
So they were just like, we don't know what to do. Let's not do it. So.
That sounds like a lot of games.
Yeah. And the people in recently that they shut down the airports, like today, yesterday, I think today too. They're like, well, we don't actually have we have that much space, but it's a really risky proposition to go on this much of a thing. Let's not do that. Let's not die. So, good news is our asphalt is not melting. It's right up to 200 degrees because we're in Phoenix, and that's smart. But the tar is not. So outside my apartment complex, we have these little, you know, things of tar where the road's been repaired, and you can see them covered in pine needles, like completely like drawn in it. It's
fused
ridiculous.
Into the tar.
What?
Like fused into the tar.
Yeah. It is just, it's like bubbling. It's gross.
Flashpoint for JP8 is higher too. Higher temps make refueling hard as well. I think that is a reference to how planes fly. But let's move on to their working projects.
So, Mike, you got something here?
I do. I just spent most of the past couple days working on the book of Celestial Heroes. So I started with my document, and now I got like 19 or 20 class archetypes, and then 20 holy spells, which is actually kind of a pain to buy, because a lot of the holy stuff has been covered. But I think it. And then a bunch of equipment, and holy feats, so I finally did the holy vows. I'm excited to see what people think about those, because I really like those from Book of the Zelda of Darkness. If you remember, they had like the vow of poverty, the vow of.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I too have redesigned those at one point.
Yeah.
Vow of poverty was huge with my group.
Yeah. Conceptually, they're excellent. So,
Execution-wise, not so much.
We'll see what people think. And then, I don't know, I'm waiting. I got stuff for the Book of Zelda Darkness coming in. Luis was supposed to turn over his Dark Transformation Prestige classes for the Book of Zelda Darkness. So, like, you take your fighter or whatever, and you take a couple, or eight levels, I think is how I'm going to do it, and turn yourself into a number of different things. Gargoyle, Rakshasa, Chromatic Dragon, I don't know. I like Prestige classes a lot. We talked about this a lot in the previous shows.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, like in 5e, I feel like if they're done right, they can be done well. Or they'll, I don't know. If we do them well, it will be done right. If done right, they will work out. So, I don't know. I'm very excited about what we've done. Police is really good.
Cool.
Really good.
That's cool.
And I have a bunch of other stuff to do, but mostly I'm just happy to get some of that off my plate so I can focus on all the other things. For anyone who didn't know, we hit the Shadow of the Demon Lord stretch goal for the Book of Zelda Darkness, and everybody loves this Fukima conversion for Shadow of the Demon Lord 2, so that was really cool.
So, we'll ask our guest now. So you got anything you want to talk about? I know there's something you can't talk about, but...
Yeah, there's something I really want to talk about, but I can't yet.
I will pimp it out when it's time.
Okay.
I would
even come back on soonish. Let's say within the next 5 weeks or so. But if not, that's fine. You can talk about it then. We'll talk more. I can talk about... I'm working with Nat20 Studios on the revitalization of Shadowlands Kickstarter. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh, really?
But there's some Psionic content that I'm throwing at that, and it's super cool. Very different. It's a Dream Scarred Press compatible, but very different from what they have, and I think they'll be super stoked to see it. So, there is that. Also, probably some more Psionic content from my company, Lost Spheres, as well. In addition to that, I just submitted something on Adventure to John Brazier, but I don't think it's going to be out for a while yet. But I don't even know if I can say the name of it. So it's pretty cool, though. I get to do some things normally characters don't get to do. Resurrection. I can say that much.
So,
how about you?
Yeah, so I got something. It kind of started, some of our projects start as this, like, dude, what if, and then end up a week later having like 60 pages of content written for across all of our guys, and we're like, oh shit, I guess we have to put this out soon. We actually, at about 3 or 4 weeks back, I think, started talking about, dude, what if you guys don't know, we've done the Tarrasque Link, which allows you to play as a sp- Spawn of the Tarrasque, which is like something that a lot of people love. People keep asking
what was that in?
That was in Half-Breeds and Hybrids. I think. No, it was non-traditional races.
Have something of yours?
It's possible.
It's
one of the racial guides. It's up on our wiki, too. Viking did this awesome artwork. It's actually like, it looks kind of like, I don't know, like a giant muscular yellow Koopa with like a dragon head, big horns. It's one of our favorite races. And we're like, what if we did that with other races?
Sure.
So we started doing stuff with like, let's see, what do we have? We have a Morlock player racing version, but that's not really what I'm talking about. We have like a Gorgon, we have a Gorgon conversion where they're basically like Sparta, but like historical Sparta.
Gorgon, so like Bull Gorgon?
Yeah, Bull Dwarven, or Gorgon. So, they're effectively giant minotaur that are steel and breathe like noxious chemicals. We actually wrote up like a chimera race, which actually has three heads. We have the Zorf, which is the Zorn and the Dwarf just kind of bumping uglies, which is just a horrible image in your mind. Never getting that out.
Hear that right. Zorn and Dwarf?
Yes. If you look at where they cohabitate, there's a lot of it. And I'm like, it's basically a trilateral, like, dwarf. I got some art coming in for that. It's going to be bizarro. What else?
So are these, like, Paragon style? Like, you take
No, these are just straight up PC classes. So, like, a player can just... we use racial point approximations to approximate how, just for the sake of balance. I know they're not, like, exact, so we use them... We try to keep them in the 10 to 12 range. Or if
you kind of, like, start out with your basic level and then just kind of roll it up?
Yeah.
Kind of savage species style?
No, these are all racial point 10 things.
Huh.
You can just put them in the game with an elf.
They're just really monstrous races.
They're monstrous, but they're not reaching that racial point level. A 2 or 3 do, but most don't.
Are they monstrous humanoids?
A lot of them are monstrous humanoids. A lot of them are. Almost all. We have a vermin player race, too. But there's also... What was there? Oh, you guys know what an Almiraj is?
Yes.
The murder bunny? Yeah, we have a murder bunny race with a 2-foot horn.
Oh, okay. I got two things to mention now.
What?
Murder bunny race. Nice.
Yeah. A lot of them are very warlike species, because a lot of them came back from, they used to be this, but then they kind of... went the human route. We have a Neolithid race, humanoid Neolithids, called the Neos, and they're just like, it's the greatest thing to ever come from a really evil, evil place. Because the Neolithid, there's like a Neolithid who's like, dude, humanoids keep like killing the hell out of us, man. We are not going to survive as a race. So they kind of switch over and produce a bunch of humanoid offspring who are decidedly
good.
What?
Ambassador race?
Basically, they're an ambassador race, but they're genuinely good aligned, and they're just basically, like, really helpful and nice, but they look like these horrible, like, tentacled people with, like, no faces and, like, a big maw and stuff, and it's just, like, they wear, like, head coverings and, like, burkas and stuff, so, like, they don't offend people.
We'd like to talk to you about our book.
Well, they're, like, we don't actually worship that thing, but we're kind of, like, cool, thanks for giving us life. So it's playing the long game, and they're like, we're really uncomfortable with the evil things it does.
Yeah.
So we're not doing that. We're opposing it. But there's, like, fragments and sections. Anyway, we have a whole big write-up. It'll be a lot of fun when it comes out. It's actually our second thing in the chamber. We got that big item book coming out soon, which is not items, but I talked about it before. It's, like, classes that have to do with, like, crafting and creation stuff and whatever. So, yeah, that's what I'm working on. I'm working on something for you, but I can't talk about that.
No.
I will. You let me know when I can talk about it. I will talk all about the things.
I got your email this morning, and I will respond to it soon. But I have 2 points I want to bring up that you made me think of.
Yeah, sure.
One, the Almiraj. So not only do I have a spell to make a holy hand grenade in the Book of Celestial Heroes, I included in the text that when you pull it out and, like, pull the pin, the sacred pin, you have to count from 1 to 3. Not 5, but 3 in parentheses.
Nice.
Yeah. And then
Monty Python.
I had an awesome designer moment the other day because I was talking with the design, DAF. I was like, hey, so like, what are we gonna do with the mad scientists? Like, I know Gaspadrio's one, that's for sure. I know I want one like this. I know I want one like this. Its name is Casquette. I love that one. But I didn't know about the two other ones, and I like to give them a say. What's gonna happen? And Luis, of course, always Luis pitches amazing things. He's like, can we have one that's all obsessed with time? And can you have this stuff from this template? And I say this was a designer moment because it was totally something I designed. There's the Alacritus template and the Advanced Bestiary. And I was like, of course he can have that thing. I fucking designed it. Yes, he can have that. So yeah, that was pretty dope. I can't believe I forgot about that.
But yeah, so the next thing we talk about here is what's your favorite project that you're not involved in? And
I have one that I found out the other day. I didn't know about it. It's called PCGen. It's just PCGen.org, and it's Free Hero Lab.
Very good stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, dude, go check it out. I need to look more into it. Like, there's a way that you can put in your own classes of races and stuff, right?
Yep. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. So once I figure that out, I will be using it.
Back in, back in 3.5 land, I had custom entered, like, half of everything in there.
Oh, wow. So you are really knowledgeable about this.
But, yeah, definitely check it out. It is worth a look.
And again, totally free. So if you don't like it, whatever, just get rid of it. Not a problem.
Nice.
Yeah, I wish I had known about that a while ago. But, I'm about to design a whole bunch of NPCs. I actually have a lot of the evil ones already done, but besides that, I'm gonna have like another 40 to do. So being able to access that.
So, you got anything for us?
I was actually just looking for the name because I'm gonna butcher the pronunciation, so I figured I should probably at least have the name in front of me. It is a Kickstarter that's currently going on.
We have a whole thing on Kickstarters later on.
Okay, so
yeah.
Should I not talk about
save
that?
Save it for that, because we'll be talking about a bunch of them.
Oh, sad panda. Okay, well then I will spare that.
Product that was cut out by somebody else that's, just me.
However, I guess I'm also super stoked about the Mythos book that just is coming down finally from the Kickstarter for that. So that's actually going to be available, not Kickstarter.
Cool.
Perfect. I don't know if Sandy Peterson's big Mythos thing. It's super cool. Brain Cylinder familiar.
I love it.
Super excited by that book.
And it's just called Mythos?
What's that?
It's just called Mythos, or how would I find it?
It's a Mythos Compendium for Pathfinder. So we did both Figs, which are also amazing. I think I might have one somewhere nearby. I do. Just a sec. I don't know how well you're going to get the detail on this because it's orange, but I'll try to hold it up.
Oh,
it's horrible.
That's cool.
Oh, this would be awesome.
I did a Kickstarter for a bunch of figs like this. I think some of them might have been used in Cthulhu Wars.
Oh, okay.
But they also are doing a big kind of combo bestiary and character options book. Super sweet. Like I said, just became available to people who weren't in the Kickstarter. And it's killer and horrifying.
The best combination of two traits.
Right?
Alright, cool.
So, I guess today that is totally unrelated to, like, a product, but again, it's free, and it's something as a developer I have a problem with sometimes, and it kind of solved a problem for me, so I kind of want to pimp it out. So you guys ever get eye strain working for, like, 8 hours on a white document or something like that?
Yeah,
sure, yeah.
Let's say the other day I got really, really bad eye strain from something. I don't remember. I think I was editing a long list of something in Excel. I've been working at it I had no sleep. I've just been working at it. It's called f.lux.
Okay.
That's the URL. It's like the domain name is not .com, it's .lux.
Uh-huh.
So it's Flux, but it's a screen app, and it kind of, I'm just going to pull mine up, show them the screen here. It allows you to adjust the the light levels on your screen to adjust it, and it syncs it to where you are in the world. So as the light in your room gets lower, it'll adjust too.
That's that's pretty
so
cool.
So you won't have the harsh blues at night or whatever, and you can manually adjust it at any time. Let's see, do you want to come up for me? May have come up somewhere after me.
That's a good thing to bring up anyway. If you're doing any kind of art ordering, I didn't even realize this for over a year and a half. Make sure that you have your monitor set right.
Yeah, totally.
Like you see the grades and stuff. Because what you get out of print will come up weird because you're looking at it weird on the monitor. So,
yeah, I've got actually three side by side and they're all different, slightly on resolution, so I'll turn around and look at all of them.
I have a second one over here which is running open broadcast software for us right now, but yeah, I use two and they're always a little bit different, though. I managed to sync them. But yeah, you definitely want to check the color profiles. You can actually go ahead and if you bring them to like Photoshop,
look like what they're going to look like.
I do a lot of graphic design stuff, and that is like, some clients will be like, well, this isn't good. I'm like, you don't have the right color profile set. Let me show you, and I'll do it. And they're like, oh, it looks nice. Thank you very much. You know?
Huh.
Yeah. You'd be surprised at the differences. All right. Well, cool. What was the f.lux?
f.lux. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, f.lux. And it's like
it'll make me
your
look
glasses,
less
but without it. So.
Oh.
It does get a little bit redshifted if you leave it too long at night, but so I tend to shift that back, especially if I'm watching something at night, but otherwise it's pretty good.
Cool. I'm probably just destroying my eyes and not caring, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm typically good until much more than 8 hours, but like, I gotta be like, it's not even a time I spend on the screen, I think it's just more time I spend concentrating than anything else. I get like a massive migraine and nausea and I gotta sit down.
No, totally. That's what happened to me and I was, the other day I was just posting on Facebook like, guys, what the hell just happened? They're like, oh, it's eye strain, here's how you fix it. And then it worked pretty well. I actually have some computer classes things coming in to see if that'll help in the long run. And it wasn't just 8 hours straight, it's one of the things that you said. I had a little red the night before, it was Monday, and so Sunday night I was working really late and then I got up a few hours later, worked on stuff for a few hours, went to a meeting, worked on stuff for a few hours, and my eyes were just totally shot by then. I was like getting myself blinded, I was just nauseous and headaches and stuff. So if you're working on stuff like that, guys, take care of yourself, please, 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 please.
Nothing else to do.
So, what do we got next on the docket here? We got,
Starfinder and Pathfinder news!
Mike, this is kind of your wheelhouse this week, I think.
Maybe. I've been pretty heavily into the, anyway. Yeah, I don't know. I've been very into work. But, as we start off every one of these weeks before Starfinder comes out, there's an excellent Google document somebody on Paizo's forum boards put together. I share it in the chat room, and I will share it on the YouTube description. It collects all the info that has been released about Starfinder so far. So, if you're looking for any information about Starfinder, go to that Google document, and you will probably find that information. Or it hasn't been released.
Cool.
Yeah, no, it's pretty comprehensive.
Yeah,
I'm not even bothered trying to do it myself because like somebody's already way on top of it.
Yeah, Amanda Hammond Coons ran our game for us, and it was super cool. I have my list of pointers and things that I saw in it up if you guys care.
Well, here, why don't we do? Sorry, I put my fan on as soon as I'm not talking. So as we just need dipping down every now and then. So anyway, so why don't you tell us about it? What were your opinions on it? Kind of describe your experience.
Sure. You know, I'm going to say it felt a little more simplified, which I think that was probably good. I think it's definitely going to be more a robust, you know, Pathfinder is a very, people jokingly call it Mathfinder. I think for that kind of very obviously connected system, it's very compatible in a lot of ways. It definitely takes away a lot of the complexity, like things like feats. You have a lot of the kind of people call them feat taxes. You're shooting into combat. Since there's laser guns everywhere, those are all gone, and it's just something you can do. Keeping track of your attacks opportunity, that's not a thing anymore. If there's a provoke, there's a provoke. Split. Did you guys, either of you ever play the old D20 Star Wars?
Hell yeah!
Yeah, we actually had someone on here a few weeks back who had a version for it, so.
Did you guys, either of you ever played?
Cool.
Well, if you liked that and you liked particularly kind of the whole, like, two pools of, like, I'm hurt a little, I'm hurt a lot.
Wounds.
There's stamina and hit points, and so your stamina is kind of your I got roughed up, and your hit points are your I just got blown a laser hole through my spleen. That definitely was kind of cool to kind of get that feeling, because there are certain abilities. It allowed the Inspiree character, I believe it's called an Envoy, I think, kind of the Bard-esque character, has stamina healing stuff, which is kind of cool, because then I had the kind of cleric-y character. I was playing this insect who's like carrying around his little larva baby guy with him, and it was super sweet. But I could heal the hit point damage, and I could do stamina too, but the Envoy could do stamina kind of things as she was like guiding the group. That was super cool to kind of have kind of a split duty on that and a different feel on that.
Stamina uses a resource at all?
What's that? There's actually a pool. What's it called? It's like kind of like your hero point pool, but it has a different name. I'm not sure what it's called.
Anyway, that's unfortunate.
But that resource pool taps into a lot of kind of like healing actions and recovery actions. I'm sure someone probably in chat might throw it out if someone is listening who's seen it. However, it's a kind of like a hero point pool, very similar to that, and you use it to trigger certain abilities. Certain heals went off of it. Your channel energy-esque ability ran off of it. A lot of the Envoy stuff ran off of it. And I believe the operative,
a lot
maybe?
Of
the
Envoy stuff.
The sneaky rogue guy had a pool that he was using to do some of his stealth stuff. And the stealth sneak attack stuff was more skill-based. I normally don't talk much about 4E, but it had a 4E-esque aspect with magic items kind of having a level recommendation to your system. So, like, if you're a certain level, you can get access to certain gear. And there's a lot of that kind of thinking in the entire game design. I mean, your ship levels up with you, your guns have levels, your everything kind of... So it's really easy if you need to, like, start a game at 5th to kind of dive in and get that stuff set up right with game balance. Spells were 0 to 6. There's not 7, 8, 9. That didn't mean those spells didn't do damage. Because of the hit point stamina situation, a lot of things actually did more damage. Not everything, but a lot of stuff. Your higher level attacks did quite a bit of damage. Laser guns did pretty good damage. I definitely felt like the fighter character, the soldier, I think, she could deal a ton of damage, which was really cool to see. You know, not it wasn't like a backseat. Because, you know, around 5th level, to me, is kind of sometimes where, depending on your game and your GM, you start to see spellcasters kind of swing in a little more. It definitely did not feel that way. Felt like pretty much everybody was valuable. It was really cool.
I will disagree with you with the melee switch out, because our damage per round Olympics, we still have our barbarian champion sitting up there.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. If you build well for it, melee can stay high up. And I did say, depending on your GM.
True.
A good GM with melee characters, you know, I've written about it on my blog a ton, will support those melee characters with good gear. Sometimes, if not, you fall on the wayside. But that's a whole nother diatribe for later.
All right, well, it sounds like you are very pro Starfighter.
Yeah.
Good to hear.
Really
to hear.
Cool.
I've been saying that its success or failure is going to fall on whether or not spaceship combat works. So they were saying they only expect that to be 1/10 of the game, which I felt was a little rough.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I remember, like, old Starship battles, Starfleet battles, sorry. And people loved that part of the game, you know, it was the major part of the game, and it was just huge. We had a lot of people who gamed it in my old comic book store when I worked back there forever ago. But I don't know, you can probably run a really heavy, like, Starship battle thing, but I also think you're going to kind of have more, maybe, like, a Serenity vibe, where you're kind of, like, you know, off a lot.
That's why I think it's going to be a tough balance, because on the one side, they're going to want to get the people who are like, yeah, Star Trek, Star Wars, freaking TIE Fighters! And on the other hand, they're going to want to be, you know, the Serenity, space adventure, space opera, not necessarily always in the ship, And, like, I didn't think it was going to be a one-in-one situation by any means.
Right.
I figured it was going to be, like, 1-3, but, I don't know, 1-10, that sounds low.
So, one thing is, I've already talked about this a few times, I am doing a utopian sci-fi thing. We're waiting to see if we're doing Starfinder or not. If the rules support it, we're doing it there. If not, we'll take our business elsewhere. but, yeah, so I'm definitely interested to see where they go with that.
Well, I think it's going to be the sort of thing where, you know, you could play a Starfinder game that's just, hey, a dungeon crawl.
Right, but, like, the core of the Paizo's whole thing is their subscription-based adventure service, right?
Right.
So, like, in order for that all to work, then, and to get the people that they want to bring over and to retain the people that they want to retain from Pathfinder, you know, it can't just be like, it's going to be your game. No, it's got to be like, this is the story and game that we are selling, and you know.
Well, there definitely was, like, because we were actually playing part of the third Adventure Path, Pete, and we got kind of a summary of what had happened before, and part of that, there's like a pirate spaceship battle, and when you get to a certain point, you have the option of, instead of like building up your own Serenity, your own spaceship, you actually could swap out for the pirate's ship.
Nice.
And that sounded really sweet. That's where you kind of cool. Got like this one and done upgrade. I think it would also appeal to players that maybe don't have the energy or time to dig into the shipbuilding rules and like actually customize and kit it out. They just can jump into that new ship and it's good to go.
Yeah, right? I mean,
I think that'll be really appealing to a lot of people. But it clearly, we were involved in a part that we set down our spaceship and put it on lockdown and walked out of it. That was it.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, well, I don't know. And, like, they do have some control over it, right? And they get, it's not like 1960s where they don't find out about the sales numbers until, you know, 14 months after the fact, right?
Sure.
Yeah, so, but, like, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I don't think it's going to stay at 1 in 10. I'll say that much. I don't think that's going to stay.
I don't think it's going to appeal, too, because I don't know if you kind of heard that, like, when you go into ship mode, you're kind of, like, Voltron-esque. Like, everybody takes over a role of the ship.
Yeah, everybody's
still involved. Because I don't know if you guys, do you play Shadowrun? Anybody?
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, when our Decker or Rigger took over their scene, it was, like, time to go, like, run to the commissary and get, like,
Totally. Yeah.
Because you were just sitting there. And I think that's going to be really cool that they're aware of that problem and working it from day one.
So, the, way back when I was, like, super young teen, I was at our own system, did a sci-fi expansion, they had a ship. One of the problems we ran into, teenage Scott ran into, was that the engineer, what do you do? Well, I repair the ship this round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do? I roll a d6, I heal the ship. All right, I'm done. And she was an artist, so she would literally sit there and go, I heal the ship. And then she'd go down to take her pen and just, what else do you want to do? Just heal the ship. You know, yeah. And I hear that there's lots of new things to do, like adjusting power grids and swapping things around, but it's still one of those things where it's like, I like that they're actually taking that effort to like make it feel good, because it could very easily be, all right, one guy is the ship character, he's just going to do his own thing, bye.
Right. Something I totally forgot, actually, and it's not that related, but energy AC versus physical AC.
Yeah, kinetic versus energy.
And I thought that was rad. That was really cool because you could get an item that like was a dampening field that upped your E, you know, your energy AC. And that was kind of neat, kind of like, you know, bullets might still be effective against the right monster because its physical AC is much lower. So that was kind of neat. I like stuff like that because it tweaks the design space a lot. So.
Speaking of all this spaceship combat Starfinder, last week we talked about it, but Ian World went to UK Games Expo and got to do a Starship demo. And this week they did an article that was just summing up all the different articles they have done on Starfinder, and it was very comprehensive. So check out that on the EMWorld. They were he was pretty comprehensive with his coverage of how Starship combat works. It's definitely worth it. Yeah. Very interesting. For sure.
So tell us about grappling, Mike.
Yeah, did I put this stuff here?
I hope so, because I didn't. I'm familiar enough with it to be able to talk in it, but
yeah,
apparently a ghost put it there. wasn't me.
Yeah. So no maneuver attacks of opportunity. No maneuver provokes. Okay, so that's cool. So you can trip and all that other stuff without provoking. So everybody's got the improved feats. Basically, all target AC plus 8. So they got rid of CMB, which I think. I don't know. I like CMB and CB.
I do.
I do too.
It's much harder to pull off than just hitting somebody. If you hit the gain of grapple condition, obviously it's a bit longer than that, but those are some beats. I did not put that.
I didn't write that either, dude. Who the hell wrote that, seriously?
I don't know.
I didn't do it.
All right. Anything else for Starfinder, Pathfinder?
No, I'm good.
Yeah. Like I said, I was very...
I don't know what you covered in other episodes, so I don't...
I mean, yeah, you mentioned it. I'll let you know if we can talk about it or not.
You guys have talked about the upcoming releases for Ultimate Wilderness and the Book of the Damned Collection. Okay, cool.
And the Fae book that came out was the last episode.
Yeah, I'm looking happy you, buddy. I looked through all the old things. It was you added that, apparently.
I have no memory of doing that.
So he's adding stuff to our schedule and in some dream state, some fugue state.
What happens when you take that many freelancing jobs?
This is what happens. I did produce many, many, many tens of thousands of words. You lose some time. All right. D&D 5e news and speculation. I do remember putting this shit up here.
Thank God. Our Joe ghost editor is not taking over.
Basically, really pushing super hard for a Dragonlance D&D movie. They've gone so far as to do like table readings and stuff, and they're working on acquiring the PC rights.
That's cool.
But the studio had to move the PC rights because they are about to lapse. And the studio was like, you should still pursue this. So, yeah, no, I think it's cool for sure. I don't know. We did an episode on the D&D movies. I thought the Book of Vile Darkness movie wasn't that bad, honestly. I kind of enjoyed it.
Wasn't that good?
It wasn't, but like it felt like a serious college filmmaker tried to make the movie and had a budget. And that was much better than the other D&D movies.
Right? That's true. Yeah.
And if you take it from the context of, like, I don't know, I'm pretty old, and when I grew up, I remember being excited for Barbarian Twins and, like, you know, really bad, bad fantasy. And it's bad. All of it's bad. But I remember, you know, kind of thinking in that context, those movies were just like those other bad movies.
Yeah, but they were decades out of date in, like, the zeitgeist. I've used that word again. Yes. Has changed quite a bit from the days of the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Conan Barbarian movies.
Red Sonja. That was awesome. But when, all the other stuff came out, like, around the same time, you saw, like, Lord of the Rings and all that stuff come out by comparison, and just, ugh.
It changed the landscape.
Oh, look, I've cut you.
So, I don't know. There's a lot of good hope for that. And there was a bunch of reveals about Tomb of Annihilation and the Xanthar's Guide to Everything books.
I like Xanthar. That's cool.
I know you got a big list here, Mike. You want to go over it pretty quick?
These are just from Ian World. So Tomb of Annihilation is 1 to 11, and then with Adventure League content, take you from all the way to 20 there. The problem that is at the basis of it is the death. Like, somebody's preventing people from coming back from the dead, so, like, when you die, you die. There's a bunch of new monsters, like the Almirage that we were talking about earlier. Kamadons, Man Traps, Tribe Flower Fronds, something called Jacuzzi, and then Zorbos, which are evil koalas that destroy magic items.
Wait, did you say a jacuzzi? Because please tell me you said a jacuzzi.
Jacuzzi.
Oh, I was really hoping you had to fight bubbling water, and just sit there and go, oh no, how dare I? My muscles, they're relaxing.
Flying monkey familiars, I think. And of course, dinosaurs.
Of course.
Interesting. More playtesters on this than any previously released adventure, which is nice.
This is Xanthar?
No, this is the Tomb of Annihilation.
Tomb of Annihilation has flying monkeys in it.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Entertaining?
They use stuff from the Tomb of Horrors, and it comes out in September. Then for Xanathar, September 19th, by the way, which I think is a full 6 weeks after Starfinder?
Math.
Yeah, we're good at math.
Sounds about right.
Terrible at dates.
Because it's Gen Con, right? So.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking Gen Con's early August.
Yeah, so I think it's around the 14th, 15th. I don't know. I'm guessing.
At least a month. So
I'll be there, but
I might be there at Gen Con. We'll see. They offer a really sweet deal. We'll just see if it actually works.
Cool.
And for Xanathar, it's got everything. There's like 20 subclasses, one for every PhD class. Feats, spells, backgrounds, all the stuff from Unearthed Arcana, and then some stuff that has not appeared on Unearthed Arcana. Available in November. And then they have a super detailed thing from somebody who was like in the room at these reveals that goes over in much more detail what happens in Annihilation stuff. And then also they talked about D&D Beyond, and this is something that I am deeply amused by. So D&D Beyond
deeply
is
amused.
Deeply amused.
Okay.
Deeply.
I really hate the DM's Guild and the way that what I can only describe as a thuggish Russian gangster fashion, WotC has controlled the third party market.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty. Especially, I guess it was spoiled by Paizo, who actually want people to make stuff for the game.
Yeah, I know, that's crazy, right?
Yeah, right? So, anyway, so D&D Beyond is their like, online thing. Eventually, it's going to be sort of you have to pay for it. You don't have to pay for it. Right now, it's got forums and some rules. Some of which are not on the SRD,
which
for the most part is just the SRD, right? It's handy if you need to go and sort through monsters, but otherwise I don't think so. Anyway, they're moving it along, right? It's coming along, and soon you're going to be able to share homebrew items. Somebody asked about DM's Guild creators sharing stuff on D&D Beyond, and Chris, Lindsay, and Adam shared a look, and they said they weren't ready to announce anything yet. So, here's the other part about D&D Beyond, I really dislike. Whenever you publish something on D&D Beyond, it becomes the property of D&D Beyond, like the intellectual property, right? So you can't, you can publish your own setting on there if you want, that's the only place it will ever be able to appear, ever, forever.
And Hasbro now owns it.
Basically.
Yeah.
But, And I'm sure that they'll change something or whatever. But I think the way they've done it, they can't put it on DMs or D&D Beyond right now because of the legal fuckery they've done. I mean, I'm sure they're going to change it. Oh my god, that would be so fucking funny. Oh my god. Yeah, the official D&D marketplace content cannot go onto the official D&D online tool, which is the amazing,
beautiful clusterfuck.
I had a good 20-minute laugh over that when I found that one out. D&D Beyond's come along good, and they have some subscription stuff out, although no price points. Basically, you get the master subscription whenever you buy something, which I think they're going to phase in, like if you have a physical copy, somehow you can get on. You can share stuff with your players.
That's marginally cool.
Yeah. And then stuff will come out on there the same day it comes out in Hobby Stores, which is unfortunate, I think. I think they could have given FLGS's, 2 weeks or something. But, it's Hasbro. And that is it. That's all I got for D&D 5e News. Much more than last week. Oh wait, I forgot. This is interesting. The Adventure Time guy, Pendleton Ward, was involved with the Tomb of Annihilation.
Yeah, we heard that.
Yeah. Now. Not anymore.
You sure?
the Book of Exalted Darkness Kickstarter funded, so there will be a Book of Evil Decadence.
Nice.
I worked out the bonuses for the Blood of Infants feat together last night. It's pretty vile.
So,
I still have to work out what to do if you use human infants, because like that's the super vile evil option for the ritual. But I haven't worked out any of
pretty bad.
Yeah, no, I'm getting
I take it there won't be a Pathfinder compatible edition.
No, there will not.
We were just talking the other Sunday about things Scott can't put in a book, and the list is growing.
Yeah.
We have a new designer who doesn't design for Pathfinder. She helps me with Mutants and Mastermind stuff.
Oh, this is a great segue to the next thing that's been going on.
And she kept telling me, she's like talking about Pathfinder stuff. She's like, so can you do like a prostitute class or something? And I'm like, no. Like, I would write sex magic in a moment, but I don't think that's PG-13. I don't think that's going under the Pathfinder compatible license at all.
Yeah.
That is a great segue. So now we'll be talking about other RPG business and news. And recently, the Vampire the Masquerade 5e playtest dropped.
Speaking of prostitutes... Oh, wait.
Well, speaking of weird sex magic and stuff like that. I don't know. Scott, you're way more connected to Vampire. Do you want to talk about this, or...?
God, no, I'm not. I've played, like, one game once, and it's not my cup of tea.
Oh, I played 1st and 2nd edition quite a bit, but I hear this is a little bit far from that.
I know that they're doing different... They're segmenting things that they did before, kind of like they're doing, like, The Hunted and, like, you know, The Masquerade and et cetera, the different source books.
Yeah.
But from what I understand, they're segmenting them into different games.
Maybe then this other thing is just a bluff to take people's attention away from that.
Right? It was an older thing I had, so maybe they've changed their mind. That's what they told. I think I was on the show saying that a few weeks ago too. In the same, because I remember I was talking about in the same breath as saying the Warhammer Fantasy one is splitting the Age of Sigmar and the other one into two different games too. So what do you got for us, Mike, in Vampire the Masquerade?
Well, I mean, that's what I was saying. So, alright, that's not the part that's recently gossiped for Bumble, as far as I'm aware. Although I guess that people do have issue with that. In the playtesting adventure, there is a character, a pre-generated character that you play as a PC, who is one of the pre-generated characters. I'm just reading a quote off of Vendor's blog. Loves to feed off of and have sex with the young, meaning young vampires. Followed by Ventru Freeding Restrictions. You only feed off children and very young teenagers. And
so
that's
it's
just
a pedophile.
Restrictions on running the player character. And yeah, there is other stuff that basically you could interpret the character as a pedophile.
Can we not encourage pedophilia in a game, please? Like, we got past the satanic panic. We don't need pedophilic panic now, too.
Yeah. I mean, like, I just finished a lot of infant speech, and you get extra stuff if you keep human infants. But, like, you know, that's just killing. That's not, like,
Well, if it's one of your core clans, that's ridiculous.
I don't think it is. It sounds like it's just a PC.
I don't think it's just a PC.
Like,
but still... Oh. As a thing to introduce the game to people, it sets a kind of tone, right?
Yeah.
I didn't include the Blood of Infants feat in the primer material for the evil primer. It's like, I wanted people to know I'm going to be doing evil, but like, Blood of Infants feat is pretty much as far as you can get. So, you know, I don't know.
It's not in like the core book.
And it, moreover, pedophilia is a thing that you don't know if the people at the table have played. Or have experienced that, and do you want
we don't
to
play pedophilia
in your consent discussion?
No.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Yeah, this comes back to there's a whole discussion at a few years back at Gen Con when they were the diversity in the gaming thing. This lady was telling a story about how one of her first games, she went to an old, you know, old guard table at D&D. I think it was D&D. I don't remember what she was saying. It was at a game store, and she was literally like he's the guy at like halfway through is like, her character gets raped. And then they move on. And she's like, one moment, please. Can we have a talk here? Because that's not cool. Oh, well, it happens. This is a dramatic story. You're not getting a freaking, you know, like, Emmy for your goddamn D&D campaign. No offense.
Yeah.
There's no reason to make a character feel uncomfortable. Every time I run a game, I have a little form I send out ahead of time. It just says, what are you comfortable with? What are you not comfortable with? And I'm not going to push any boundaries anyway. Pedophilia, like, my spectrum is here. pedophilia is in the other state, dude. That is, like, so fucking wrong. You don't need to push those borders. We're not dealing with the Holocaust in a goddamn D&D game for the most part. We don't need real-world religious tensions.
It goes 6 months before this happens. Like, what was it? Last time it was the Torment of Rape, some fucking god-awful title thing about rapists. You remember that? Yeah?
Vaguely?
And then before that it was Exalted Rape Magic.
Yep.
Like, why can't you learn? Like, don't, come on. Love God, people. Like, it's not that hard.
I mean, you've heard of Fatal, right?
Fatal? I don't know.
From another time, from another land. So, let's talk about Fatal. Fatal was a game designed by a racist, sadistic fuck. Sorry for the language.
Fatal?
What?
Is this the white power dude?
I don't know if he was white power, but he is not nice.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Alright, I will use a phrase and I'll let you guys know if you guys know it. Anal circumference potential.
No, we've already had this discussion.
Yeah, so I'm saying, but so he...
Holy...
Yeah.
Crap.
Long story short, it was very racist, it was very weird, and it was very unsettling. I ran one game on the DARE in college, and we've talked about that earlier.
No, there was a more recent one. There was a more recent one.
What about something happy?
Yeah, but the idea is, like, you don't need to go that far in your game, you know? I'm not sure the proper forum for that, but it's not a role-playing game with your friends on Friday night.
No. Not
I was surprised
even
you came to the vampire game. That's for sure. I was surprised. But,
that's a weird thing to playtest with.
Other media of interest. I can't think of anything. Oh, the Adam West episode of Powerless is on YouTube.
Yep. As a guy who, you know, visits hospitals as Batman, you wonderful man, you inspired me when I was a kid. Thank you very much. They also have a 66 Batman movie coming out, an animated one, which will be...
That's cool.
And he voiced the whole thing. It's actually continuation of the continuity of the series, supposedly. So,
did not know that. That's cool.
There was something else I was going to talk about. I can't remember what it is. Let's see.
Yeah,
I finally watched My Hero Academia. It has some pretty cool superhero concepts, though it screws its own premise that it initially sets out with.
I saw you said that, so I haven't jumped into it yet.
It's a decent series. It's not living up to the... Everyone's like, it's the next Dragon Ball Z! And I'm like, not so much. It's entertaining, though. And I know I'm late to the game on that one, but...
I'm always late to the game with anime.
Eternal Crusade. I want to talk about Eternal Crusade.
Oh, yeah. I backed that since it first got announced.
Yeah, dude, that came out, and you can download it and play it for free. You can buy an upgraded premium package.
Yep.
Oh, all right. So it's a Warhammer 40K game. You play Space Marines, or Chaos Space Marines, or Orcs, or Eldar.
You get Chaos Mutations for your Space Marines if you play Chaos?
Nothing that was, like, crazy that I noticed, but I just started. I haven't heard of it.
So let me tell you, I've been following this since it came out, because it was first announced.
Yeah.
There are pictures of me kneeling at a THQ booth, the big wall of, like, a stained glass McCrag window. I was wearing trip pants, you know, way back then. But when they were talking about it initially, they were talking about it being, like, literally including every unit in the 40K universe. They're talking about, like, big world battles, and here's a clip scene of how it's going to work, and this and that. And now, from what I understand, it's kind of a small shooter with four factions.
I think this is a Worm 40K book.
What's it called?
It is. It's called The Tome of Decay.
Yeah, that's Dark Heresy's Chaos book.
Writing and development. There's a guy in here named Mike Mahler. What's that about? What's that about, Scott?
Yeah?
So weird. It's so weird. I wonder if I know that Mike Mahler guy.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Oh, jeez. Oh, golly. Oh, golly gosh.
But I'm going to say, man, it was promised to be this big, and they're like, well, actually, it's going to be this big. We're revealing today, special for you viewers, it's going to be this big. And they keep just making it down, like, oh, come on, dude, don't. Oh, no.
Oh, that's still pretty sweet.
I'll have to check it out at some point.
And it's free. Like, you don't pay anything to play it. Like, what?
I got into the, way back 2-3 months ago, I got into the beta for... What the hell was it called? Dreadnought? The big sci-fi battleship game?
Oh, no, I don't know about that one. I know they just came out with one where you roll around in a space vault, but it's not like a space combat game. It's like a dungeon kind of thing.
Well, this one's like you control massive... You really feel massive. It's crazy. The ships are big and low and slumber and kind of lumbering. And they look huge. It's awesome. You have all these guns on and little things. The problem is the matches are way short, and despite looking really big, you just kind of die really quick, and there's a lot of balance issues. And it's one of those pay-to-win
games.
That's
a bummer.
What?
Yeah, we'll see it slowly blow apart.
You do, but instead of, but it's like, but it's only the animation. It's like, oh no, instead of being like losing like, your left thruster's out, instead it's just like, boom, all right, respawn.
Boom, you're done.
But it's cool, like really slow combat is really cool, because you have like different weapon sets you change to, and there's like sniper things that are basically like really lightly armored, like high energy single weapon shot ships. But it's very play to win. It's very, again, I played the beta, so take it with a grain of salt. The servers never connected really well. Things would drop. The game, there were some really big balance issues. Like, there was a small little, these big ships come at each other, and then you'd have these small little ones that would come around, and you couldn't turn fast enough to ever hit them. And it didn't matter that they were very, like, lightly armored and didn't do much damage. When you get five of them on the field, you're just like, oh.
They take you down.
It didn't matter. Like, you were just screwed.
That sucks.
And again, it was pay to win, so you can lock. You could spend weeks and weeks filling out tech trees and doing the different things, or you could buy something for $10. And I was just like,
summer.
Good. So, but again, it looks cool. It kind of fits in with the Warhammer 40K theme. It feels a lot of like Battlefleet Gothic, kind of.
I think it's what they wanted the Shadowrun game to be when they made the Shadowrun like first person shooter game back in the days of the Xbox.
Yeah.
It's like that, but like one thing that's been a problem. I haven't gotten to play against the computer because the queue for that is too big. It's always been PvP, and it's just capture the point. So like you're either volleying points around, or like it starts and you're defending all the points, and other people are coming.
One of the things with that is when they initially announced it, they were talking about open world, like you can play the Space Marine. And the orcs are the free-to-play one. I'm like, oh, that's a cool concept. But it was like you fought like mech boys in the middle of like a field, and like it just feels like they really under-delivered on that.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. When was the last time? I mean, it's. I think we can all blame Lionheart Studios and the guy who made Fable for this.
What?
But like, overpromising.
Oh yeah.
Like that was the guy that broke all of our. Broke us all, and now you know that they come out and they give you the monorail, and it's not what you get, but we're used to hearing monorail. So,
when your gameplay is a thing,
developer come out ahead of time and then actually deliver what they promised.
I know. I've been on that side of the developers. I've been on that side of part of the developer thing. You know, I've been on that side, but it's just insane, man. I don't know. So it's milestone. It's companies cut your budget. It's company. It's scope creep. It's.
I mean, I'm just saying. What they made is awesome.
I'm gonna give it a shot. I'm just saying. Like, I really want. I want the thing they promised me initially. That'd be so cool. But I'll take what they got.
I want playable Tyranids where I can like go and like eat everybody. That'd be rad.
Do that in the Dawn of War games.
Uh huh.
That's not a third person shooter. It's like what RCS.
So we're kind of getting closer to time. I want to make sure we have time for Christian at the end here.
Yeah, Kickstarter. My Kickstarter's over. If you want to email me, got Kingmaker? Where are they at now?
Kingmaker is not funded, but they got 10 days to go, I believe.
Oh, they're like $11,000 away.
Yeah. They have 20 days to go.
20 days to go.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's
cool.
It's pretty cool. The demos I've seen of it.
Oh, yeah.
I got in for $22.
You already backed it, right, Scott?
I did, yeah. I backed it. I backed that one at the same time I backed Mike's. We had a culinary cookbook out there too. It's overfunded by 2,000. By almost by about $1,000. It's over funded, which is kind of cool. They're at their second to. They just reached their second to last. They're at their second to last stretch goal. Their last one is at 5,000. They're at 2,600 now, and they got what, 10 days? I think they said.
Yeah, he's doing good.
Yeah, he's gonna be good. We're having ours in August. It looks like we just logged all of our stuff in there for Nagual. Oh man, it's gonna be big. We're getting the cover art done. I locked the contract in with Rui. We got Rui on here though. He's in Portugal. It might be a bit hard.
There's also that Niobe, She Is Life. It's a graphic novel Kickstarter. That's what I was going to talk about earlier.
Oh yeah, please.
The reason why I'm bringing it up is that it's only got 3 days left, and there's actually a digital Pathfinder supplement for it to play in the setting of the graphic novel.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's licensed to everything, so like it's going to be a real deal. 32-page supplement. So people should check it out. Not a lot of people know that. I mean, it says Pathfinder on the Kickstarter splash page if you look at it, but not a lot of people know about it yet. And you can get a bunch of cool graphic novels and comics, digital or physical.
Is it in the what's it called? Is it in the part that has the tabletop section, or is it in the graphic novel section? That's probably why.
That is an excellent question. I don't know. Let's see.
I imagine it's in the graphic novel
section.
I imagine graphic novel, because the project title says comic book on it, so.
Yeah.
There might be another Kickstarter in August, by the way. Maybe.
Are we both doing one in August, maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe,
That's the time to do them, so good luck, everybody. Oh. I, thank God, do not have one planned in August. I don't know. I don't know. If I do, I'm pushing it to September.
Ours is going to be, we should have a pretty low goal, because the thing is, we've already finished the product.
Very cool.
We have, my goal with Kickstarter is, we need to deliver some of the physical books on our last one, which still pissed me off. Someday we will finish that. But this one, we have the product entirely done.
That's cool.
We're looking for extra art, we're looking for initial orders, and we're looking for funding for the next one, basically. But when we launch it, it's going to be literally, it's Nagual, it's a big system we've been working on. It's literally going to be, hey, guess what? Here's the entire core rulebook. If you back us, you will have it day after the Kickstarter ends. That's my goal. I might be formatting very long shortly, but we're going to have our quick play rules out as part of the initial. Just check it out, see if you like it. We have our gorgeous artwork. Rui doing our gorgeous, gorgeous mecha designs. Our cover. Oh, it's going to be beautiful.
Awesome.
But
actually, that's something to mention.
Yeah, go for it.
I don't think I'm going to do any more 3D PDF things for my Kickstarter.
You're not going to?
I don't think so.
Why not?
I don't think so. I don't think that the people want to put that much effort into looking into it, and it turns a lot of people away.
Does it?
I mean, I've done 6 now.
Yeah.
Right? The one that didn't have any explicit free PDFs was the easiest to get funded.
Huh. Interesting. Hmm.
I think it's that, knowing for sure what it is I have planned and what it is, exactly how I'm going to go about it is a disincentive for people who don't want it done exactly that way. And when it's just a promise, and they're like, they're buying into the promise, when they know what the delivery is going to be, it changes. But yeah, I
may have to think on that then.
Yeah, like I think I'm better off spending my money and efforts on like making the pitch better and getting arts that will blow the sort of page out of the water and some like marketing, I guess.
Lot of our money is going to art, is basically what it is. I want to make this book super pretty. I want to keep Rui working for me round the clock for 2-3 months, man.
Yeah, I gotta get a time this week to order a bunch of stuff for me marketing.
I hear all the artists.
Yes.
Definitely. That is a goal for mine as well.
Yep. I'm paying my guys for the work they've already done in this one, which is quite a bit. But I think our Patreon stuff, we might actually do a... On our pa- Patreon. We might actually give people a quick preview ahead of time for like 5 or 6 people we have on our Patreon. But we actually just released, because I've been kind of lax with them, like, you know what, guys? I was lax in the last few. Instead of charging you, here's our last 7 PDFs. So they all, people got a good gift the other day. And actually, they also got Free Wars for free, which is kind of cool.
Well, we should have a free session here for whatever Crystal was talking about.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, you're up, man. What is on your mind? What do you want to be about?
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know what Lost Spheres does.
Yeah, tell us.
That's kind of a good place to start. I jokingly would say we write the stuff that nobody else wants to write. but yeah, like, if you want connective tissue for your game, like, where things that may or may not work explicitly together, be that Pathfinder Paizo stuff, be that third-party content. I do a lot of support for Psyonix from Dreamsguard. I do a lot of support. I've done some stuff that supports Spheres of Power. I've done some stuff that combines Akashic stuff, some of your stuff, Scott. But a lot of what I do comes from, you know, kind of deep diving into the math behind the game. And I know we've kind of talked about that earlier together. But I do a lot of it and try to then take that back away so that the end user doesn't have to do the math. And I write a lot. Has over 300 entries if you're interested on Pathfinder stuff. I do a lot of balance analysis. I do a lot of, hey, if you want to make a character like this, you know, I did a series on shape changers, a series on roguelike characters. I did a series on guys who make their own energy weapons. It's called Form Blazing Sword from Voltron, I mean, you know, that. Stuff like that, I try to kind of get that into people's hands and show them different ways, particularly to use third-party content, because there's so much good third-party content out there. People are terrified of it. I have a lot of stuff about permissive gaming on the blog, if you want to check it out. I've been...
Lost Spheres blog?
Yeah, Lost Spheres Publishing. It's the Hero Within blog. I advocate gaming as spiritual engineering technology to make better people. But you can read all about that on there. There's a little button that says why on it. If you want to read that, it kind of goes through my whole breakdown on why I think fantasy gaming is a good thing for people. But, you know, want to just kind of connect everything up and kind of help people understand, you know, how games really can work. I like I said, I play most of my games to 20th level. I run 3 times a week at least. I have played fantasy role-playing games. I actually learned to read from first edition D&D.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
I had 2 older brothers who did not have a healer, and so I was their cleric. Named Cleric. That was it. Over 30 years ago, started GMing, so you can kind of guess. I've been doing that for a long time. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for the power of yes, just kind of going through and seeing, you know, it's so much more time efficient to say, let's see how it plays, than to, like, micromanage every bit of content. You know, it doesn't matter. If you have an optimizer, you have an optimizer. And if you're core campaign only, they're going to optimize. And that's not about third party. It's not about, you know, playing with ACG. It's about the person at your table. And if you have a problem with that, you're going to probably have to confront them. But that's a whole other thing. Blog articles about it. Some of the coolest stuff that I think I've done, I really like Mythic. I know that's probably not the easiest pill to swallow out there. But I think that's because that system wasn't robust. We got 6 archetypes, 6 different types of characters. And if you were playing the wrong type of character for those archetypes, Mythic didn't work. Not really well. And so I added 10 more, and I've added a few more since then. And, you know, if you have a shape changer, I've got a Mythic path that's specified for, you know, shape changer. It was that, you know, if you were playing a mage-based shape changer, anybody who took your 1, 2, 8 path options could do what you did. And I've got a whole thing that, like, builds out your shape changer and makes it super cool and different. I've got, you know, one that's for specifically spontaneous casters and sorcerer-type bloodline-based characters. I've got, you know, somebody who's multi-class who has different source origins. I do a lot of work with, like, what really is the difference between divine magic and arcane magic and psychic stuff and psionic stuff? And, like, I want all that stuff, all the toys, you know. Put more legs on a table, it generally doesn't get less stable, it gets more stable. And, you know, having those different options, I love, like, say from Paizo, you know, everybody was kind of like, oh, Ultimate Intrigue, what's this? You know, social combat totally flips power dynamics. Your bard is your, you know, power game character in a social combat game. And, you know, a lot of people give support characters a bad rap, but then suddenly they're your frontliner.
We had a review of a product.
Kind of diving into those different play environments, that's what I like to do. A lot of my products, you know, I have Paramore, which was the, I get made fun of it for a lot. It's the character who blindly follows somebody around. So, Xander from Buffy, you know, who just gets the crap kicked out of them over and over again. It's that character class. I've got, you know, other things. If you like blue mages from Final Fantasy, I have an Echo class that just duplicates stuff. I just released Shadow Weaver, which is kind of an expert shadow magic user. Book of Beyond does a whole bunch of things for people who don't want just psionics and or psychic magic, who actually want both systems in the same game. And it kind of like dissects, you know, what does it look like if you have these two different things and how are they different? So, a lot of different connective tissue, like I said.
So I got a question for you.
That's more or less my angle.
So I got a question for you here. You said you've worked with other third-party material doing connective, you know, tissue between them. How is that for you? How does it feel working third-party to third-party sometime?
Working for other third-party?
No, I'm saying, like, so you've used content from other third-parties, you're saying.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So how does that feel? Does that differ from using it from, it kind of makes you a fourth party, which is kind of cool. Does that differ from using initial stuff? Do you feel like there's a market for that stuff?
A market for, like, third party on third party connective stuff?
Yeah,
absolutely. I don't think there's a lot of GMs that are comfortable enough. So part of that market is educating your GM, honestly. But yeah, there's tons of stuff, and, you know, like, things that link up, like, you know, if you want to have a character who uses, like, a blood blade from something, but then there's also this rune blade character class, they're from two different sources. If you can talk your GM into working that, that should be a way to make, like, your blood rune blade, right? So,
totally.
That's the thing I think there is a market for. Again, if your GM's cool with it, and kind of getting GMs over their fear, that's unfortunately falls way too much on the player. I really think it should fall on us. Kind of educate, and that's one of the things. If you look at my blog, I kind of dig deep into, hey, look at this, this is, you know, these are potential balance pitfalls you might see if you interact these two rule sets. You know, Divine Channeler, for instance, from Wright Publishing, plus some of Owen Casey Stevens' Rogue Genius stuff, there's some huge interactory space that happens between those things, like goblins and stuff, and it would be terrifying to the wrong GM. But if you kind of educate them and kind of show them how it works, pretty cool. And, you know, if it has a little feat support, even better. And, you know, I think one of the reasons, particularly with, like, an optimizer, you see things happen, is that they're jumping out there and they're grabbing for a powerful effect when the effect that they want doesn't exist.
Totally.
But if you give them the effect that they want for the character concept that's more tailored to their needs, it actually might be more balanced than, say, the thing they had to just shoehorn in there to get kind of close. You know what I mean?
Totally, yeah. That's what we see with a lot of third party. It's like, that's the space the third party gets to kind of exist in. I want to play Wolverine. How do I play Wolverine? You know what I mean?
Right.
You can kind of do a druid and get some clawed. Here's Wolverine with the numbers filed off, you know? Here's how you do. How do I do, you know, Superman? I'll be Superman. Okay, here you go. I'm gonna be Robin Hood, player ranger, you're fine, you know what I mean? But, like, yeah. there is that space. One thing you brought that was interesting was you were talking about social intrigue flipping, like, the power dynamic a little bit when you have a social character that's really just bonkers good at what they do. We had a review on a social book we put out recently. If you were on Facebook, you saw me kind of being like, oh, you didn't read much. But one of the things you pointed out was, like, a social character would be really, really strong, and I'm like, in a social setting, a social character is good at doing social stuff. In a martial setting, a fighter is good at doing fighting stuff. You know? But that's such a fun thing. I always felt like social things should be a different, its own power source, you know? Politics should be power.
Running him in my Sunday game, man, that's just a total different animal. It's kind of cool to see there's a multi-class character who kind of takes point, and because she's got the right social skills, it's amazing.
I was going to say, you should check out RPGResearch.com if you're interested in RPGs being a way to, like, better people. That's, like, literally this guy's mission. He's got, like, a roommate. You don't think about a lot, but people in wheelchairs, it's not excellent for them to get into a lot of gaming stores or into people's basements to play games, and the table's not normally super accessible and stuff. So yeah, that's one of the things this guy's got, like a mobile, wheelchair-friendly gaming room, I believe, right?
That's cool.
And a bunch of other different projects, yeah. RPGResearch.com. And then for the Mythic stuff, I liked the basic design of Mythic, I just didn't like how they did it. I felt like my character was invincible, and at which point, what was the purpose of doing anything, right? And so we made the hyperscore system, and then the approach we took was to give everybody, like, here's the paint for your character, here's four different kinds of canvases, you can mix them up if you want, and you can make pretty much any superhero using Pathfinder. And then every Saturday on my blog, I have different people that people request.
Squirrel Girl. I saw Squirrel Girl.
She's a couple weeks ago. We're up to, like, I think 20th is this weekend.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm the grandpa here in terms of that. I wrote, Legendary Levels as one of our first releases.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that was a train wreck. It was a good train wreck. We learned a lot of things. People still request it for some reason. We're actually on Wikipedia for that. I'm very proud. I mentioned on Wikipedia because we wrote the epic level rules for Pathfinder.
Very cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. I like the template on the rules. I thought that was a good idea. Then you could get a different feel for the game without having to be 30th level. That was cool. I think they went way too hard on making you invulnerable.
Yeah.
And the drama was gone from the game. But they had bigger restrictions to keep in mind, right? Like, they had to make that PFS friendly.
Yeah,
I don't have to do that. So, like, there's a lot of weight off my shoulders.
Sure.
So, I think that brings us to the end here, Mike.
I think it does.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, man. What was that?
A couple parting shots if you want.
No. Your gorgeous face fills the screen. It radiates like the sun.
We have a correction.
Oh, we have a correction.
Somebody was, we were talking about DM's Guild, and I got confused. Cobalt Press does not publish their stuff on DM's Guild. One Bookshelf auto-generates websites for their affiliates, their RPG Now, DraftKings, RPG, DM's Guild. And whenever I Googled their thing, their name in DM's Guild, that's what did auto-generate the page. So...
there you go.
Action finally got that. I didn't mean to do that for like a month.
I will say to anybody who's interested in my stuff, keep an eye out on my Facebook page, on our blog for the next, let's say, 5 weeks.
Yep.
Probably see some pretty interesting things. Especially if you're missing planar stuff. I'll say planar stuff out loud.
All right, planar stuff. There's some really cool planar stuff. I can verify that.
Yeah,
so,
it's going to be amazing. In early 2018, Storm Bunny, I'm working with them on something also incredible. Unfortunately, I can't say what, but keep your eyes on that as well. Jasonia's got something super cool in the pipes.
He sent me the, I got to look at the art and stuff for that. That was crazy. It was just like forever.
It is awesome. So,
all right, guys. We got nothing else. Let's wrap this up, guys.
All right.
Pleasure having you, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, definitely. See you guys again next week.
See you.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.